chapter 23, verses 33-37. When they came to the place called the Skull, there they crucified him, along with his criminals, one on his right, the other on his left. Jesus said, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they're doing." And they divided up his clothes by casting lots. The people stood watching, and the rulers even sneered at him. They said, "He saved others, let him save himself if he is the Christ of God, the chosen one." The soldiers also came up and mocked him. They offered him wine vinegar and said, "If you are the King of Jews, save yourself." Come on, my turn. There we go. There's one thing in this world that drives me crazy more than anything else, and that is ignorance. We see ignorance around us each and every day of our lives. Those things that leave you wondering, what on earth are you thinking? Like, are you using your brain? I don't know how many of you have ever heard of this particular award, but it's called the Darwin Award. And I know Darwin is not generally a good thing from the pulpit, but the Darwin Award, it celebrates the fact, well, the principle of Darwin of the thinning of the herd, how the weakest and the dumbest are usually the ones that get killed off first. And it celebrates, it's a website on the internet, like darwinawards.com or something like that if you want to go check it out. But it celebrates the stories of those people who do us all a favor and get killed. Not going well, is it? No. But there's one particular story on there that caught my attention. The other day as I was reading through it, I was trying to prepare for this lesson. It was about a man. He had just bought himself a brand new Porsche. Nice, expensive car, probably didn't cost him less than, I don't know, $80,000 or $90,000. But he's driving around one day, and he comes to one of those intersections where there's like the train track and then a stoplight. And he didn't get pulled far enough, like he just stopped on the train track, which is not a smart thing to do in the first place. Those of you who are learning to drive, don't do it. But he parks there on the train track, and he's sitting, he's waiting on the light, and of course, a train is coming through. And so the barricades come down around him, and it takes him a while to realize what's happening. And he just kind of sits there. And he's sitting there, what do I do, what do I do, what do I do? And then finally he gets out of his car, realizing that probably wasn't a safe place. But he goes running down the track towards the train, with his hands in the air, trying to stop the train before it gets to his new car. And I don't know if you can imagine where this is going or not, but the car did not receive near as much damage as he did, because he didn't think to get off the track from the oncoming train. But we see ignorant things like this happen every day, and you just can't help but wonder, where does it stop? One German playwright wrote this. He says, there's nothing more frightful than ignorance in action. Another person said this, that the recipe for perpetual ignorance is this: be satisfied with your opinion and content with your knowledge. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that fear always springs from ignorance. In this passage that Shane shared with us earlier, I believe we come across one of the biggest acts of ignorance ever seen on the face of this earth. These people, the Jewish leaders, the Pharisees, they were satisfied with their opinions. They were content with their knowledge. And because of that, because they thought they knew it all and had it all figured out, they were fearful. They were fearful of this man called Jesus, because they saw him as a threat to their way of life. They didn't recognize him as the Messiah because they were so caught up in all their rules and all their regulations. If I was a witness to this, even as I'm reading this, I'm frightened. To see that ignorance in action is a frightening thing to me. That we could be so dumb that we could put the Savior on the cross, all because we were so caught up in the rules of men. We can have a whole lesson alone on the dangers of ignorance in the church, but that's not the focus of this lesson tonight. What I want to focus on is this, the first words of Christ, the first of his last words as he's hanging there on the cross, at least what we think are the first. As he hangs there, they've had the parade through town, they've led him up to the hill, to the place called the Skull, they've nailed him to that cross, and they've hung him. And at this point, most people are crying out in pain and in anguish. They're crying out for mercy. But not Jesus. As he hangs there, he's silent. Not saying a thing. He went through his whole trial and hardly uttered a word. And now he's hanging on the cross. It's the same thing. Just imagine yourself there at the foot of that cross and you're looking up at him. Looking up at Jesus. Wondering if he's going to speak. Wondering if he's ever going to cry out in pain, because you know it's got to be painful. And then you see his lips start to move. And you can just, you know, this wave maybe of relief comes across you as you hear these words that he has to utter. And he says, "Father, forgive them, because they know not what they're doing." In the midst of all the wrongs that are being done against him, we find Christ, the man, God incarnate, doing two things that he has done throughout his entire ministry. We find him praying. Did you realize that? That little phrase, that little short sentence, is actually a prayer. His ministry began with prayer. Luke chapter 3, verse 21, after he was baptized, he begins to pray. He prayed at every important juncture in his ministry. Everything important that ever happened in his life was always preceded with prayer. When he was tempted, when he was out in the desert for 40 days without food, he prayed. As Satan came to him and tempted him, he prayed. When he came back and began choosing his disciples, he prayed. When he was done teaching the 5,000, I can just imagine all of his energy was drained at that point. He went up on the hill alone and prayed. When he comes back down from that hill and he walks out into the middle of the raging sea, he prays. When he goes and finds his dear friend Lazarus has passed away and has been in the tomb already for a number of days, he gets down on his knees and he prays. So he's in the upper room in the Last Supper with his disciples. He prays. As he's in the garden waiting for what he already knows is coming, we find him there with his disciples praying. Prayer became this tool. It was a tool for Christ. It was a tool of renewal. It was a source of confidence. It was something that people didn't understand. And even today when we read it, we still just read over those words and say, okay, that's what he said from the cross. Big deal. He was on that cross and he was praying. He was praying. He knew that whatever was troubling him, whatever he needed strength for, that God would understand. Whatever he was going through, he knew that God was going to be there. He could always talk to God. We also find on this cross his forgiveness. As he's hanging there, his thoughts are not on himself. His thoughts are not on his own pain and his own anguish. His thoughts are on us, on you, and on me. He begs God for mercy on our behalf. What an incredible thought that is. That as he's hanging there on that cross and all the pain that he must be feeling at this point, he thinks of us. He's begging for mercy. Because honestly, if you were God and you saw people doing this to your son, those of you who are parents, if you saw things happening like this to your children, what would you do? Honestly. If you were God, I think you'd send down those bolts of lightning, that fire and brimstone from heaven, and kill every single one of them, wouldn't you? You'd want to. Honestly. You wouldn't just sit there idly and watch what's going on. Because as parents and as providers, we tend to hold grudges rather easily, don't we? When things are done to our kids that are wrong, when people wrong our kids, we hold on to that. But here we find Jesus begging God not to hold it against us. Not to hold it against them. So we're here at this scene, and we hear this saying, and we're going to talk about a number of these things. But tonight as we look at the cross, we see prayer. We see forgiveness. But what can we do with them? What can we do with these things? What lessons can we learn? Now, if it was you having to put this lesson together tonight, what lessons would you want to share? They seem kind of infinite, don't they? All from that one simple phrase, you could preach for hours and hours on end, and I won't do that to you, I promise. But all these lessons, I've picked out three, and they don't even come close to all the ones that I thought of. But number one, to make some application for us, I want us to pray anytime, anywhere. I want us to pray. If Jesus can hang on the cross and still be praying, you can too. You know, sometimes we think of prayer as a scary thing. You know, we can't pray in public. We can't pray at school. People think we're weird. When you're in the car, driving down the road while you're sitting at those red lights, rather than cursing the red light, why not spend that time in prayer? When you're in class, rather than falling asleep, say a little prayer. When you're at work, before the big ball game, before a test, when you wake up in the morning, thank God that He lets you sleep through the night safely and that He allows you to awake to this new and beautiful day. When you go to bed, thank God for the day that you've had. Thank Him for all the blessings in your life. When you lose someone special to you, when you lose something special to you, pray. No matter what's going on in your life, there is nothing too small and insignificant for God. There is no reason to keep all that stuff inside you. All that stress and all that anger that you feel inside, there's no reason to keep it there. Jesus didn't. Why should you? Leave it all up to God. Number two, I want us to pray. Not only do I want us to pray, but I want us to pray for others. Have you ever thought about that, praying for others? A lot of times we think, well, God, thank you for this, and please help me with that. And, you know, I've got this big test coming up. Help me with that, too. But in His very last prayer, Jesus prayed for us. If this was your last prayer, the last prayer that you ever got to say in your whole life, what would you say? Honestly, I think I'd be one of those that was praying for myself. Would you? I hope that that's something that we can work to change. Begin praying for others. You know, sometimes our prayers seem hopeless. Maybe there's that person you've been praying for years and years and years and years and years. And they're still the same person they were when you started praying for them. You can't give up hope just because that person seems beyond reach. In His last prayer, Jesus is able to pray for His enemies. Those people who seem furthest beyond reach, honestly, if you ask me. You know, people that would be hardest for Jesus to reach, He's still praying for them. And that's such an important lesson to me, is that no one is beyond the power of prayer. Nobody is beyond that power. Nobody is too far gone. So not only do I want us to pray for others, but I also want us, number three, to forgive. To learn how to forgive. That's probably one of the hardest things. One of the hardest lessons for us as human beings to learn is to forgive. But in His last prayer, Jesus Christ for forgiveness. He asked for our forgiveness. These are the same people that had beat him, that had made him carry his own cross. They mocked him, and once they got him to the top of that hill, they drove nails through his hands and his feet. These are those people who deserve nothing less than to be thrown in the pits of hell and forgotten about. But yet Jesus is able to pray for their forgiveness. When things happen to us, when people do things wrong to you, I want us to be able to forgive. We need to be able to forgive. That's the only way we're going to get to heaven, is if we can forgive those people who wrong us. We need to forgive just as God has forgiven us. There's a story about Leonardo da Vinci when he was painting the Last Supper, when he was painting that big mural, that he had a rival artist, somebody that he didn't get along with very well. They kind of had it out, and he was so mad, and he still had that anger inside of him at this person. And as he was painting this, he came to the face of Judas, and he painted that man's face as Judas's face. So he knew he had this enemy painter staring at him the whole time, and he went on and he was doing the rest of his painting, and he would come to Jesus' face and he would try to work on it a little bit, and nothing seemed right. And so he'd go back and do a little bit more and come back to Jesus' face. And after a while, he started thinking. He started to realize that maybe there was something inside of him that was keeping him from being able to get this done to put Jesus' face on this wall. And so he went back to that guy that he had painted as Judas, and he changed his face. And after that, he was able to finish that painting rather quickly. No matter what happens to us in our lives, we need to be able to get over it. We need to be able to forgive. We've got to move on. If you harbor that inside of you, there's always going to be parts of you that can't move on from that. We've got to forgive. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they're doing. How's your life tonight? If you had to look inside and examine yourself, how are you doing tonight? Have you been living this life of ignorance? Are you one of those people who would have nailed Jesus to the cross? I like to think that I wouldn't have been a part of that. I like to think that I would have been off with the disciples. But I can't say for sure. Where would you put yourself tonight? If you're living that life of ignorance, you need to stop. You need to come to Jesus right now. Sometimes even when we think we're right, when we think we've got it all figured out, we're completely wrong. We've got it all wrong. In our lives, we need to pray. We need the power of prayer so much more than even I realize, than most of us realize. Prayer is such a powerful tool. It can get you through anything. We need to be able to pray for others. We need to be able to keep others first in our minds. And we also need to forgive. I don't know where your life's at tonight. If there's anything that we can help you with tonight, please come as a stand and sing.